The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Mompos, Bolivar, 6 hours south from Cartagena on Colombia's Caribbean coast. Behind me is the Magdalena River, and in front of me, out of the window, the view is of colonial rooftops, mango trees, and tropical bird life. So pretty special here at the moment as we see out quarantine in rural Colombia as opposed to Bogota. Check my blog out, richardmccall.com. I wrote a little entry about that this last weekend. This week on episode 335, we'll be talking to musician, singer-songwriter, Gregorio Uribe. He's from Bogota, but he's made his name not only in Bogota, but in Boston and in New York. We're lucky to have him on the phone from Bogota, where he's currently under quarantine there too. So great to have this very, very upbeat and interesting musician on the show to talk about how he blends cumbia music with that of a bit of jazz and some funk and so on. So very exciting to have Gregorio, who has been described as one of the Colombia's 100 most influential people overseas. So pretty cool. Thank you for all the feedback in recent weeks regarding some very strong shows that we've had, very strong episodes. And I know that you all, there was a lot of feedback on episode 334 about Buenaventura and Tumaco with U.S. academic Shauna Gilluli. So very cool to have that kind of feedback. This week we'll receive feedback as well. And I've had feedback, very positive feedback for our latest newsreader, Emily Hart. People have appreciated very much her take on the news and the way it's delivered. So again, thank you to all of you out there. So I'm going to take a short break and leave you in the hands of Emily Hart for, again, the news segment. And then we'll be back in segment three with Gregorio Uribe in Bogota talking to us about the music in Colombia, the culture, and more. So a nice upbeat episode for you all, cultural, musical episode for you all this week. Don't go away.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Colombia Calling for the week of July 27th, 2020. Colombia has now reached 240,000 cases of COVID-19 with 8,000 deaths. Capital city Bogota has the most reported cases of the contagion, as well as one quarter of all of Colombia's deaths last week. The city's intensive care units are now at 93% capacity. Medellin's are at 89% and Cali's are at 80%. A number of new ventilators have been delivered to hospitals around the country, but many have yet to be installed. The process is complex and requires specialists, which are currently lacking in Colombia due to a lack of training. Colombia is now reaching 4 months of emergency measures and the peak of the pandemic is just beginning. 5 million jobs were lost in May and unemployment has passed 21%. Thousands of businesses have folded and poverty is expected to grow by more than 10% this year. The government has now announced the details of its economic recovery plan, being dubbed the Colombian New Deal, which will supposedly be a combination of fiscal stimulus and welfare guarantees, with a cost of 100 trillion pesos, a mixture of public and private money. The ambitious New Deal claims to be structured around employment generation, clean growth, commitment to the most vulnerable, and commitment to rural areas, peace, and the rule of law. Calls are mounting for the government to take action to tackle the failures of security in conflict zones across Colombia, after a massacre in the northeastern part of the country left 8 dead, including Colombian community leader Ernesto Aguilar Barrera. The attack was committed by paramilitary group Los Rastrojos, which has a strong presence in the Catatumbo region. These murders demonstrate the state's ongoing failure to address the total collapse of security currently affecting several regions. Guerrilla groups and paramilitaries alike have consolidated their control and territories during the pandemic, with ongoing murders of social leaders and armed groups running their own lockdown regimes in various regions. In the wake of numerous recent scandals in Colombia's military, including rape of women and children, a number of proposals have been brought forward by Vice President Martha Lucia Ramirez, including the strengthening of women's rights and compulsory psychological testing for army entry. Among these proposals is compulsory military service for women, a suggestion which has been heavily criticised. A new commission has been set up around the issue, which began work last week. That was the week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Mombos, Bolivar, so 5.5 hours south from Cartagena and 12 hours north from Bogota. And we are weathering the pandemic here in Mombos, which is probably a great place to be. And I think it is a great place to be, of course. But this week's very special guest in this very final segment of episode 335 of the Colombia Calling podcast is none other than the musician, a big band member and composer Gregorio Uribe, originally from Bogota, but now spending his time between Bogota and New York. And he has also been written up as one of Colombia's 100 most influential people overseas. So welcome on Colombia Calling, Gregorio.
Hola, Richard. It's a great pleasure to be talking with you. Thank you for this invitation. And I'm very jealous that you're in Mompos. One day I got to spend more time or live for at some point in my life. What a wonderful place.
It is a wonderful place. Although, you know, for sound quality recording, it's not the greatest. And also, I can't have the fan on while I'm recording. So I'm just sitting here sweating. But that's okay. That's part of, you know, the rhythm of Mombos.
Life in the tropics.
Life in the tropics. And you know what? If that's my biggest problem, life's pretty good.
I agree.
So listen, I've been listening to your music. I mean, we had the opportunity to sort of virtually meet a couple of weeks ago, and I've been listening to your music. And, you know, basically you give us, and you're an accordion player, but you give us a musical tour of Colombia. You're bringing in the rhythms of the Caribbean and of the, you know, this area along the Magdalena River, the Chande, but you definitely fuse it with jazz, and it is Latin jazz. And I was listening to it, and I can just imagine you and your big band playing in New York in clubs. It's got that feel to it. Tell us a little bit though about your reception in New York. I mean, you must be incredibly popular up there.
Oh, I wish. But you know what I like about New York is that nobody's special up there. And obviously, I mean, it's a generalization, but I remember when I would first visit the city, I felt overwhelmed. I'm like, you know, no matter what you do here, it feels like you're not going to make any difference, you know, because there's so many people and everybody from different places. So everybody has different music or cultural references. But that's, in the end, that sort of, there was like a 180 at some point, and that's kind of what I loved about it, that it was like you could see amazing musicians who were, you know, the top of their game, you know, playing in small clubs that you would be able to chat with them after the shows and stuff like that. So it was very personal, and I kind of loved that. And I also think that there's many New York, so I do feel that we were able to create like a good impact in the music scene that I would move in, which I guess would be sort of part Latin music and part in the jazz world or world music perhaps. And within that scene, I do feel that we've created something special, especially because we had like this continuidad. What's the word for
continuity?
That? We have this continuity with playing at like for at least 5 years every month on the first Thursday in the village. So that just made it like into a whole rhythm of things where people would know and they would meet there. We would all kind of see each other's faces. So that was part of creating a scene, and that was very exciting.
That's excellent. And what I like is that you're a Bogotano, but you've taken the Caribbean and made it your own. And sometimes this isn't, you know, this isn't something that can be done. Colombia is an incredibly regionalistic country. You know, basically each department, that's a state here in Colombia, but each department treats itself almost like a different country. But you've been able to, you know, break down these, let's say, invisible frontiers to be able to blend various types of music together.
Well, I do think that I do like this idea of feeling perhaps a pan-Colombian, if you could use that term. And I don't know, for example, I am born and raised in Bogota, but I have family, I have Paisa family, you know, from the Medellin region. But I also spend a lot of my summers in Cartagena, and I have a grandfather who was from Cartagena. So I feel that music has allowed me to at least fall in love with a little bit of every corner of Colombia. And I wouldn't let like regionalism sort of take that away from me. So if I feel that there's a type of music that I'm interested in, I fall in love with, obviously I try to go to the local or to the area or the village or the town or the city where it might originate from. But then I also kind of allow myself this freedom of after, you know, listening to it or taking some classes, seeing the, you know, the maestros of this music, then I just kind of allow it to inhabit my being, let's say. And then I don't mind, like, I guess I don't want to have this insecurity of, oh, I can't play this music because I'm not from there. Mm. No, if I like it and it flows, I will make it part of me.
Excellent. No, and I, you know, this is one of the things we need to work on here, I think, to become more, all of us, you know, I am a guest here, but more pan-Colombian, I think.
I agree. For example, with the accordion, which is sort of my main instrument, most people in Colombia just associate it with vallenato, and they're like, oh, well, if you're from Bogota, why do you play this music from the Caribbean coast? But I see it as, you know, that's the instrument that I fell in love with, and I'm also using it now to play different rhythms of Colombia and of outside of Colombia, because, you know, there's not really any rules. There's not really a necessity to use those rules.
No, definitely not. So, I mean, you're weathering the storm there in Bogota, and I know you're about to become a father very soon, and this will definitely influence your musical writing, because there's nothing like it. There's nothing like becoming a parent. And so I know you are going to end up writing songs about it. And that brings me to sort of the songs. And, you know, you've been lauded by Ruben Blades. Anyone who's praised by Ruben Blades is obviously good enough for me. I mean, and he sings the backing track on one of your, on the song, was it Cumbia Now? Cumbia?
Yeah, Universal.
Cumbia Universal. Very cool to have him, you know. I mean, how did you get in touch with these guys? Will they get in touch with you?
Oh, I wish. Well, I feel that there's the mysterious answer is that I've been kind of sending him signals since I am 12 years old, and I heard him on the radio. So I've been, you know, I kind of doing voodoo on him or something. And because there were some sort of close, like almost closing, I don't know if the term is close encounters, but at Berkeley he went to play when I was there. He received an honorary doctorate, and I was actually playing drums when he got on stage. So there's like, I was like, oh, almost there, but then he had to run out. So I always feel like, hey, I'm going to get close to this guy at some point, because he's always been an idol. And eventually in New York City, when we had this big band residency, somebody talked to him about it, and they're like, hey, you know, I know Ruben Blades. I'm going to be inviting him to your show, see if he comes. And obviously every month I just couldn't wait to see if he would show up. And many months went by and nothing. And all of a sudden, once I arrived to Zinc Bar where we played, I always arrived earlier to set up the stage and bring my instruments in. And right as I walked down, into his on the bar, I see his hat. I recognize his
yes,
iconic hat on the bar. I'm like, oh my God, Ruben Blades is here. What the hell? So I go introduce myself. Oh, maestro, we're so happy you're here. Like, oh yeah, I'm looking for the band leader. I'm like, oh, that's me. It's nice to meet you. He probably thought I was the assistant.
But hey, it sounds like you kept your cool.
Oh yeah, I tried really hard to keep my cool, and honestly, that is actually what what I think was very helpful, because, you know, he said, hey, I can only stay for a few songs. I got to run somewhere. I'm like, sure, of course, you know, let me know if you need anything. We can get you a drink, whatever, a table. And so, you know, the guys arrive, and I'm like, listen, we're changing the repertoire. We're playing the best songs, the best songs right away, the first three songs, in case he only listens to the first. So we did that, and after I got off the stage, after the first set, I went up to him and said, you know, again, thanks for being here. And he was very kind with his words. He's like, oh, this is great, I love it, etc. And during the first set, I also took the chance to, I dedicated a song to him, but without mentioning his name.
Good.
So, you know, because obviously he wouldn't want everybody to jump, because it was dark. So not everybody knew that he was there. It was, you know, kind of hidden. So I was able to just kind of do a dedication. And he's like, oh, you know, thanks for not mentioning my name. And I think that was one of the good things that, you know, you can imagine being so famous like that. You don't want people to go be all crazy and starstruck, although I was. But, you know, you just try to keep your cool. And then eventually I invited him for lunch, and I asked him if he would be willing to be part. He was awesome. And after we recorded, I'm like, listen, how can I, you know, thank you for this. I mean, what is it? How much is it going to cost? Whatever. He's like, he shakes my hand and he says, yo no le cobro a los amigos. So wow. I don't charge my friends. And I'm wow. like, oh, I just melted there.
That's when you lost your cool.
Exactly.
And wept in front of him.
Yeah. So very, very special moment for me.
Well, that's a great story. I mean, that is really, you know, that shows that kind of fraternity between musicians and musicians who you know, have this, obviously, an aura around them. How nice to have worked with and to have met and become friends with someone who clearly isn't pretentious about it. You know, he saw you as an equal.
Oh yeah, he was very kind in that sense, and I also, that's again kind of what I've loved about New York. Obviously, it has to do with the person itself, but those kind of things happen there, and you know, I know friends and many stories of people that have had those kind of encounters, and that's maybe why, you know, people really feel like, you know, it's like, you know, we're the place where you can, I don't know, go and have these very special moments with authentic and glorious musicians.
Mm, definitely. Well, it's a definite place. I mean, you know, if you're going to actually sort of, let's say, get your music out there, you know, and be not just the tiny percentage within Colombia who can get their music out there through a massive marketing machine. If you're going to get it out there, New York, and if you're going to grow, New York is the place to go. I mean, it's
absolutely
it's the world capital for that. I've been reading some of the reviews of your music and your concerts, because it's always a great way of finding out more. And, you know, you've been described, here is another, as an utter romantic and fully immersed in Colombian tradition. Would you say that's true?
Well, the romantic part, yes. The fully immersed, I'm not sure if it's exactly, because I would have to be more of an expert for me to kind of take on that title. I do immerse myself, but I am not an academic, you know. And although, again, I always say that my music is not traditional music. It's mostly inspired on traditional music. Mm. So again, it's kind of the idea of going somewhere and listening to something that you love, and then try to maybe write your own songs with your own experiences. So I would say I'm immersed, fully immersed. We'll see. Yeah, hopefully, okay. I am. Hopefully, I'm getting more.
No, it's awesome. Now, I mean, this is the immersion. Really, is what you're giving people when you take them on this musical tour of Colombia. I'm actually talking about the physical musical tour that you take around the Caribbean coast with paying clients. So tell us a little bit about this musical tour.
Oh yeah, well you're right. In that case, that's definitely an immersion, and this is well, I guess I'll start from the beginning. When I was in school in Boston. I was already into Colombian music, playing accordion, but what was happening is that as I was learning to, let's say, write for big band, learn jazz theory, harmony, all of these things, parallel to that, I was also very much into researching more about Colombian music. So what I would have to do is every time that I would come to visit Colombia, to be here for holidays, visit family, I would, as much as I could, go to the to these communities where I would be able to find maybe a teacher or just guess an ensemble or whatever it is that I could get my hands on to sort of learn and ask and take classes of tradition from traditional musicians. So and because again, this is not something that you read from a book, but you kind of really want to go to the environment and it's oral tradition, so you really want to ask questions, stay with the musicians, all of this. And I had one of these trips. It was very special because my family actually came with me. We did. We went by car from Bogota to Cartagena, which, if you drove straight, I guess it would be, I don't know, about 18 hours. But yeah, we did it. We split it in a few days because there were so many towns that I wanted to visit. And I wanted to actually, that was the first time I went to Mompox, and I wanted to go to Tamalameque and Carmen de Bolívar and San Jacinto and Palenque and all these places that for me were very symbolic because of their music or because a famous musician was born there or a specific rhythm. And so they travel with me, and you know, my family, they're not musicians, they don't play an instrument, but this idea of them coming with me to the houses of these artists made this experience very fulfilling and meaningful and beautiful for them as well. So that kind of gave me a hint of this is something that is not only for musicians. This is like music is really just being the bridge so that others can connect and you can go and meet folks from other walks of life. And that was, for example, are you familiar with Petrona Martinez?
Yeah.
Well, Petrona Martinez, for those who don't know her, she's maybe the most known bullerengue cantadora or the singer of a traditional type of music called bullerengue. She was also nominated for a Latin Grammy. And this is a grandmother, a great grandmother, who at the time might have been 60 or something. And again, I was just asking about her because I wanted to meet her. And I was just on the road stopping in the mango stand. Does anybody know where Petrona Martinez lives? I knew that it was in the area of Palenquito because in one of her songs, she says, I moved to Palenquito. So it's like, you know, her whole research. This is before Google Maps. And eventually, you know, we end up right in the front of her house. And I see right from across, you know, in the Caribbean coast, a lot of the doors are just sort of open and you can see all the way to the patio and life is sort of, you know, just open like that. And right there in the back of her patio, she is cutting up some chicharrón with her little machete for New Year's. And we're like, oh my, okay, Maestra Petrona, hi, you don't know us, but we're fans. We'd like to meet you. And she welcomed us. She fed us lunch. We drank some rum. She danced. We sang. And it was, again, just a spontaneous moment that just happened like that. And I know it was unforgettable for me and for my family. So I know this is a long story, but just kind of the inspiration of it comes from the idea that I feel like this is something that other people need to feel and get to know. And so eventually, so that was the seed that was there in my head. And about 2 years ago, I did one tour that's what I did. I created basically a tour of going to the special places and meeting these musicians that I wanted for people to meet in the Caribbean coast, where every day we meet, we get to know and learn about a whole different universe of music. So one day you're learning about vallenato and cumbia and accordion. One day you're talking about bullerengue, originally only sung by women. Then you learn about the gaita music with the beautiful native flutes. Then another day we're in Mompox with Don Abundio, who's your friend as well, you know, learning about tambora and chandé and rhythms of the river. So the idea here is to get to see a behind the scenes, the real Colombia through music, hearing the stories of the musicians. It's not a stage and crowd, people. It's like we're always in a circle. We're always introducing both of where everybody comes from, both the travelers and the musicians. And the idea is to connect through music and learn about history, geography, personal stories, politics, all through music. And we got together with Impulse Travel. They're a really awesome agency who have like the same type of, we have the same mentality together, and we got together and now we created Sounds of Colombia, and that's what we do.
Yeah, excellent. And I love it. You know, that it's so important, and that you can use music as a lens to teach about Colombia. And of course, you can't go to places like Carmen de Bolívar without learning a bit more about Colombia. And as you say, the politics and it's influential. It's absolutely, pivotal to the reality of these small towns. When you were traveling around, I assume if you went to Tamalameque, where, La Llorona, if you went to Tamalameque, I assume you went to El Banco, which is just across the way, to look up where José Barros lived.
Well, in that exact trip that I was telling you about, I actually got to meet José Barros when he was still alive in El Banco in his house. So absolutely, that's exactly what I would, you would go El Banco, it's in La Piragua, some people would call it birthplace of cumbia, there's a cumbia festival. I always had to visit it, and because I was lucky, and I don't even remember how, we ended up meeting the daughters of José Barros, who are still dear friends and we're still in touch. And we got to his house and meet, one of Colombia's most iconic and important composers.
Incredible, isn't it? And you mentioned Don Abundio, who played at my wedding back in 2011 in Cartagena. We bust them all up and the whole family. Woo. Now, I got Don Abundio around the other day and his son Samuel, who's, a huge guy. And the idea was that he was going to teach my son tambor. My son's five, and, we're all in quarantine right now. And so I figured, well, I just got to keep him busy. Well, my son's reasonably interested, but it turns out now that the classes are for me. So I'm learning the tambor. I'm 43 years old. I've got cumbia down, and I'm getting my third lesson, I believe, today. Day. I've got cumbia, I've done mapale, and I'm on chande. So there you go.
That's awesome. Are you learning the tambora drum?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I love it. I find it very therapeutic. I don't have a musical bone in my body. Let's get that out there straight away. I don't hear the notes, the difference. And my personal preference for music is 1970s punk. So that goes to tell you. I like the message more than the music.
But you know what I like? One of the things that specifically about these rhythms that you're talking about, especially from this area and the actual drum of the tambora drum, when I started hearing the rhythms from that area in particular, I really felt that there was a connection with funk. I think they're very funky. So even I think on my big band album, you hear a song like Caribe Contigo, and so you have the tambora rhythm. So if you adapt that to the drum set, it's like... I don't know. So it all kind of feels like I like to find these sort of common places or sort of common denominators for this type of music. So I'm sure if you're maybe there's a punkiness or maybe at least a funkiness to these beats that have that high energy.
I like that. I'm not quite there yet, especially with that, that drumming you did there. I'm not there yet, but I listened to Caribe Contigo as well just before this. And these are great tracks. These are great songs. And of course, as they say, and I've read this too, listening to your vocals is that people say you evoke a salsa vocalist. And there's the clarinet in there, which is one of my favorite instruments to listen to, in fact. So, but the song that I most enjoyed, and this is obviously going to, completely point at my heritage, is your cover of Come Together by the Beatles. I mean, it's incredible.
I hadn't realized that we have that connection now.
I'm not really a fan of a lot of covers because I don't think often people do, justice to the original. Yeah. And to take on a Beatles song, that's taking on British heritage. but you make it your own. So therefore, for me, it's great. It's okay. You made it your own. And I want to ask, who's the lady who's on the vocals? Because her voice is spectacular.
Oh, it's awesome, right? Well, this song is, obviously I wanted to have different singers in it to kind of, this idea of the title of Come Together and you're in New York and it's Cumbia Universal. So the idea is to kind of make it not just about Colombia, but about elsewhere. And so I invited three other singers to the track. And that voice that you're talking about is Sagit Shear. She is a phenomenal, and she's actually a drummer too.
Really?
Yeah, and so you got to check them out. You won't find too much stuff on her own with her name, because she is part of a band called, with her husband, called Hank and Cupcakes. And it's like a power duo where she's like singing and playing drums standing, and he's playing bass with crazy effects. And they're just like, just the two of them, like, can get a whole festival of people dancing. So they're amazing. And yeah, I invited her. She's originally from Israel, and I think she lives in Australia. And yeah, just the type of phenomenal people that you find in New York. And then you have the next gentleman is Meta Dia, a singer from Senegal, a reggae singer from Senegal, who, again, he would just kind of show up to jams in New York, and we met. And another one is from Sofia Ribeiro from Portugal. So the idea was to have people from kind of different continents and all over singing. But I do love her performance specifically.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I don't know what's happening or what is ever going to happen, you know, in this pandemic that we're living in. And you know, we're still very much in it here in Colombia and Bogota, and everything is worsening. But you may have known that up until this year, we've been having a jazz festival in Mompos. And it's every September, one of the long weekends in September, I forget, beginning of September. You should come and play. I mean, you should come and put on the big band. We've had big band playing around Mompos, and all of these concerts are free in the plazas at night. Everything's set up. And you know, we have semilleros, so students of music playing their instruments along the streets in the daytime. I mean, it's really, as this picturesque location amongst the colonial architecture, it's really special. And in the first, and it's put together, part of it has been put together by the U.S. Embassy at the very beginning. And we got a big band, or I think it was a jazz band from New Orleans, come down, and they played in the cemetery. Can you imagine?
Oof. No, that's awesome. I've heard much about it. I think I've sent some applications before to perform, because it sounds like a beautiful festival. Yeah, aesthetically, it sounds awesome. I also have heard reviews that it's a little elitist. A lot of the town, just kind of the actual people of Mompos are kind of just in the outskirts, and it's like the politicians and friends near the plaza. That wouldn't stop me from going, because I'll take my music anywhere. And what I would do is that if I ever get invited or play there, which again I would like, I would just have Don Abundio as a special guest, because I think he deserves more recognition.
Definitely so. And of course, he's these musicians here are doing incredibly badly right now because of obviously what we're living through. And as you said, completely, it is elitist. I have to beg for tickets to get in. I can't even get tickets for people in my hotels who've paid to be there. Because if it's an election year, it's just favors. Mm-hmm. It's Colombia. It's all favors.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. And I have to fill up. I mean, you know, in the last 2 years, we haven't taken bookings from the Gobernación de Bolívar, who are the ones who organize it, because they just fill my hotels up with politicians. And I don't want that. I want to bring, you know, tourists who want to hear jazz to Mompos.
Awesome. Yeah.
And so we, I mean, it's easy. It's easy to sell. And that's what we've done to try and, from our little angle, limit the elite nature of this. But of course, Mompos Vecinos feel left out because it's not the music that they traditionally listen to. That's one of the reasons. The other reason is that they are left out, but they would be far happier with a Vallenato band.
I agree, but I think that's where, because I think the first problem is almost not a problem, but an opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, to, again, obviously I'm being idealistic and I know it's easier said than done, but I feel that what I like about jazz, quote unquote, because I know it's a term that is just maybe too wide, or it's maybe misused even by me, but it has a little an inclusiveness to it. That's what I love to it. Like, for example, in my big band, again, although I don't consider it a jazz big band, but there was a lot of jazz spirit, because the fact of that most of the musicians were jazz musicians. They're from different countries. Every song has a space for improvising, so everybody gets to say what they have to say, even if it's dancing and if you have a chandeo or a cumbia underneath. So that's kind of what I like about this idea of jazz. And I think what sometimes people do, maybe in Colombia or maybe in other parts of the world, Latin America, they have this idea of jazz like as a fancy thing. And I don't that's the idea that I'm not crazy about. I mean, I like the aesthetic. Maybe, yeah, if you're dressed nice in the band, you know, I like the band sounds, the aesthetic, but the attitude shouldn't be that in my aspect. So even in New York, I love places like Fat Cat or Sing Bar, which are kind of the small hangout places where the musicians come in hand later, not the ones that are more like, okay, you have to pay $50 to sit for half an hour, you have to have five drinks, or you have to be standing in the bar, and then you got to go out quickly because we're getting another 100 people in there. You know? So there's like jazz has unfortunately turned a little bit into that, and I think in Colombia maybe we see it as that, as like, oh, it's a fancy thing, and it's not. It's in its origins, it's popular music, and I think it has the potential to be inclusive music, and I would love the opportunity to play there because I feel that what I do, especially with the big band, is like right on the money for that. It's like combining both worlds, hopefully, and a band that I would love to collaborate when we've talked about this. I'm going there is a band that is in the Bellas Artes. They're based, they came out of the Bellas Artes in Cartagena, led by Jorge Otero. He's an amazing porro composer and band leader, and we would love to collaborate together and go and bring this music there.
Well, no, I think it would fit perfectly because of the style that you have, and of course the accordion would appeal. We had an anarchist group, jazz group from Poland play one year, and you could only imagine just the look on people's faces. They were called Pink Freud, and they were phenomenal. I loved them. I mean, because that was what they took jazz and they made it almost punk. You know, I was just like in my element. But there's something about the atmosphere here, and despite the nature of the way, you know, tickets were given out and so on, I've only attended on three occasions because it's just too economically viable for me, unfortunately. But it's such a special time anyway.
Oh, absolutely. It looked like the idea is gorgeous. The place, you know, it like the city, the town deserves it because of, you know, how all the potential that it has. So I think it's a fantastic idea, and I'm not opposed to it at all. I wish I go, and I wish I play, and I only wish good things for Ed and for the city, because it's a fantastic idea.
So what, I mean, as we wind this down, you know, and obviously trying to ignore what's going on in the world at the moment, at this extraordinary time, what's next? Are you working on new music?
Yeah, so I am releasing my third album, bit by bit. I released the first single, which is Media Naranja, and it's out there on, you know, there's both a music video, and it's on all platforms. And I released it featuring a friend who is Jorge Villamizar. He was the lead singer of a band called Basilos. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it was especially big in the 2000s. And there, you know, so I had him as a guest in that song. And I am, I was going to be releasing sooner more singles, but because of the pandemic, when everything started, we're like, all right, well, you know what? Let's give it. Let's see, maybe it's just a month or two and then everything's over. So let's just wait. Obviously, that's not the case. So at this point, we're just kind of rerouting and saying, okay, well, now let's start releasing music during the pandemic. Yeah. That's really fine, and finding new strategies for that. So that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm releasing new singles soon. The next one, I still have to find the specific date before I say that. But this album is actually different from the Big Band album. After the Big Band album, I actually kind of wanted to go the opposite way in terms of going from like a large ensemble to kind of more minimalistic approach. So what I did is I kind of went back to the accordion as a kind of identifying myself as a singer-songwriter from the accordion, but within Colombian music. So it's kind of like the idea of somewhere that I can play just with a trio or even by myself in some cases, and really kind of writing from the instrument. And also it had to do with me discovering for myself this whole sort of different accordion style than vallenato, which is, you could call it a accordion sabanero or música sabanera. And it's, you know, I'm we're not gonna maybe go too much into detail, but vallenato being the most famous accordion music within Colombia, it was very refreshing to me to start finding artists, or realizing that artists that I already knew, they were actually part of a different style called a sabanero accordion, which includes cumbia and paseaito and paseol. So that's what part of what this album is doing, and it's a lot of it is also inspired on readings and literature and things like that. So it's kind of like a more intimate and personal experience from the accordion.
Nice, nice. And so everybody out there, listen, I mean, I've seen that all your stuff's on Spotify and SoundCloud, wherever you get your streaming and your downloads, check it out. Check out Gregorio Uribe and you'll find everything up there. And I've not listened to Meia Naraja yet, but I'll make my family listen to it shortly.
Awesome.
But
awesome.
Listen, thank you so much for your time and thank you for sharing so openly, your experience of the musical world and of course your anecdotes with great stars and artist. It's been really interesting. And of course, a clear love for Colombia and the culture and the music has come across in this conversation, of course, not just in your music itself. I wish you all the best in these coming weeks and months. And of course, obviously, abrazo grande for, you're about to become a father. There's nothing like it at all.
Thank you so much, Richard. It's been great connecting with you. I think we're colleagues, we're friends, and I can't wait to introduce you to Leonardo, who's the coming baby, and take him to Montpos, and all of us share some good times. So thank you for that. And well, thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. We've been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall. Great conversation with musician composer Gregorio Uribe. Check out his work. Very worthwhile. Very excellent stuff. Really, it's upbeat. It's tropical. I can't go enough into it. But anyway, please be sure to tune in next week. We'll have another interviewee on to talk about Colombia or something Colombia related here on the Colombia Calling podcast. As I say every week, because this is going on and on and on. Stay safe and heed the warnings, please, everyone. Do not take any unnecessary risk. This is a difficult time in which we live. Please, please, please look after yourselves. Anyway, thank you again. Thank you again for listening and goodbye.